an Article 5 convention. You've heard the hype. Now let's give you some of the facts. Next, on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy, and I'm also the Executive Director of Camp American. Well, today we're going to, in honor of the fact that I was invited over to Shelby County and to Sidney, Ohio, to give a presentation to a town hall meeting on the con side of an Article 5 convention. My opponent was a man named Steve Steckschulte, who's the Ohio Director of Convention of States. And we each had 1 half hour to give a presentation. I think I went over by about 5 minutes. And then we took questions for half an hour. It was a very good exchange. I want to thank Steve Steckschulte for being there and giving his presentation. And I also want to thank Sonia Aiken, who was my host at the Shelby County Liberty Group. Thank you very much, Sonia. You made it very easy for me. I was a little nervous, haven't given that presentation in a while, and I have added some stuff. We do have a video presentation of my argument. However, it is getting a little long in the tooth. I have added some very pivotal things since then. In fact, we're going to talk about a little bit about that today as we go into a different kind of argument against a constitutional convention. Now, why are we only giving you the against side? Well, the reason is that, gosh, you can't turn on any kind of conservative media anymore almost without getting bombarded with groups like Convention of States. Their front man is Mark Levin. He is very much pro Article 5. The problem being that his arguments are not particularly sound. In fact, I'm going to play some audio from him today, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But the main presentation today is by Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center. Tom and I are good friends. Tom grew up in Newark. A lot of people don't know that. He now lives in Virginia and runs the American Policy Center from Virginia. Tom grew up in Newark, Ohio, so he's a local boy. He and I have done a lot of work together on a number of items, and the Constitutional Convention is just one. We're going to be giving you some information about an appearance that Tom is going to make, and I'm going to give you an announcement about that today. But we do need to discuss some things that I talked about last night and also some things that are coming out in the media about an Article 5 convention. Let's bring up the fact that Tom is coming to Ohio. He will be here April 18th. He will be in Marysville. The Ohio Liberty Coalition is having a meeting on April 18th. Tom is going to be offering his 5-point plan to stop Agenda 21. Folks, those of you who are in the Buckeye Lake area should really seriously think about attending this thing. Agenda 21 isn't directly involved in what's happening at Buckeye Lake, but it is part and parcel of what may or may not be part of the problem at Buckeye Lake with the Corps of Engineers and the EPA and Ohio and on and on and on and on. So you can register for that meeting. Now, it's at the Hope Center of Marysville, 212 Chestnut Street. The meeting's going to be going on from 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. That's a Saturday. It's one of those things you can do if you plan right now. We'll post a link. It's a very complex registration area, and if I give it to you on the air, you won't know what it is, but go to our website, www.principledpolicy.com. That's www.principledpolicy.com. It's the Ohio Liberty Coalition. You can look them up on the web. And again, we'll post the link so you can come and talk to Tom DeWeese and hear his class on the 5-point plan to stop Agenda 21. So I would invite you to come out to that meeting. We will now go on. I want to talk a little bit about Mark Levin's recent appearance on the Glenn Beck Show, and I'm going to insert some audios, and then I'm going to comment. So here is Mark Levin on Glenn Beck.
Let's talk a little bit about North Dakota. Became the 27th state to call for a constitutional convention. When I saw that there have been 27 states, this is your idea. It came from, it was the founder's idea, but you're the one who brought it up in your book.
Okay, this is a problem. No, Mark Levin did not bring this up in his book. Mark Levin's a frontman for the group called the Convention of States. Does he independently believe that a convention of states, or really what is a constitutional convention, and we'll get into that in a minute, is something that should be done? Yeah, he does think that, but he did not come up with the idea. This idea has popped up repeatedly for a long time. The current thing for the balanced budget amendment, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too, has popped up in the mid-70s, the mid-80s, the mid-90s, and then again in the mid-2000s. And here we are at 2015, and we are gaining momentum once again. We had gained some momentum in the mid-2000s. Here we are in the mid-2010s. So about every 10 years, it pops up. So Mark Levin did not invent these things. If you've read his book, the Liberty Amendments, you can hear him disparage the John Birch Society, say what you will about the society. Basically, the ideas Levin is talking about were talked about by the John Birch Society 40-plus, 50 going into 60 years ago, and he can be as disparaging as he'd like, but the fact is the Birch Society was talking about things way before he was even born, and I've been talking about those things personally for about 40 years. So, no, Mark Levin did not invent this idea.
All right, let me slow this down a little. This gets a little – let me unravel this a little.
Yeah.
First of all, the language is important because the John Birchers, who despise me and the feelings mutual – say that this is a constitutional convention. It is not. Article 5 says convention of the states.
Okay.
There's a reason why that's important. They're not free to just go to this convention and throw out the Constitution. They actually have to go to a convention of the states. Look at it as a meeting of the states. The states send delegates to meet.
There's a lot of stuff in that particular part of the presentation that is simply wrong. We agree with Mark Levin that the language is of extreme importance. And one of the most important things to realize is that there is no such thing, no mention whatsoever, no whisper or hint of anything called a convention of states in Article 5. What it does say in Article 5 is that the states apply to Congress for a new convention. What does that mean? Well, a lot of people are claiming, and Mark Levin is claiming in this clip, that the states are in control of a convention. But the word application is a very important one in our understanding of who actually controls a convention. Application means that the federal government is in control of a convention. Now, how can I come to that conclusion? Well, let me ask you a question. When you go to apply for work, do you simply show up and say, I'm ready to start, where do I go? No, that's not what you do. You apply for a job, and you go through an interview process. And if the person who owns the job decides that you're the man or the woman for the job, then you get the job. And if they decide you're not the man or woman for the job, you don't get the job. In other words, the federal government is in control. It doesn't say anything about delegates from states. The fact is, that question is left wide open. And there is a paper written by Thomas H. Neal of the Congressional Research Service, and the Congressional Research Service is the service that Congress uses to tell it what its rights, responsibilities, duties, powers, and whether what they want to do is constitutional or not. The Congressional Research Service is required to write a report to Congress telling them what those things are and how they apply to what is being done. And the Congressional Research Service says Congress is in control of delegates. Congress is in control of the agenda of the meeting. Congress is in control of virtually every aspect of what Mark Levin is calling a convention of states, but is really a constitutional convention. So yes, we agree. Language is extremely important. And the fact that there isn't any language in Article 5 talking about this negates his entire argument.
And they meet to discuss possible amendments to the Constitution. Just as Congress meets all the time and they can propose amendments, well, now a certain number of states can meet and propose amendments. Now, first of all, let's start right there. Do we believe in federalism or do we not? Do we believe the problem is this overbearing centralized federal leviathan or do we not? So as conservatives, immediately this should be attractive to us. We have an ongoing constitutional convention. It's called the Supreme Court. We have an ongoing constitutional convention. It's called the President and Congress. They are changing, undermining, usurping the Constitution daily.
Now, clearly, Levin has not thought this through. Again, he proceeds in his argument from the idea that somehow a certain number of states can get together and propose amendments. actually, there's nothing to stop that from happening. It just can't happen under the Article 5 process. There have been a number of conventions in American history where states got together, discussed issues that impacted them, and in some cases suggested constitutional amendments. Now, because it wasn't an Article 5 convention, Congress sort of took a look at their proposals, gave it about half a day of quick once-over, and immediately threw it in the round file, specifically the Conference Convention of 1861. So again, the states can get together anytime without all this Article 5 mechanism and have a meeting. It can happen at any time. Ohio could get involved tomorrow. But let's go into what Levin now goes to. He goes to, this should be attractive to us because we're conservatives and we have this ongoing constitutional convention in Congress and in the White House and especially in the courts. Yeah, we do have that. And you know what? It's in violation of the current Constitution. So if we put in a new set of amendments, what's going to say that the Congress and the courts and the White House are going to obey that? We already have remedies for that, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to hear a lot in here about term limits. Let me tell you something about term limits. This is going to be a preemptive strike. The problem with term limits is it puts the parties in control of deciding whether or not good conservative candidates actually get into office. Now, what do I mean by that? The Ohio legislature is a great example, because what has happened in the Ohio legislature is that when you get true conservative candidates, some things, people like Ron Hood and Tom Brinkman, when their term is up, they don't get moved by the party into a state appointment. They don't get moved by the party into possibly an open seat in another house. They don't get an appointment to a cabinet level position by the governor if he's of the same party. The fact is, they get left on their own and they have to go drum up support for a run at the office after the term has expired, and perhaps there's a new guy who has entrenched himself in that seat. So what has really happened is that term limits have been used by the parties to get rid of candidates and office holders that hold their feet to the fire and they don't like. And that is exactly what will happen at the national level. You think this is going to get rid of professionals in office? Term limits are going to do no such thing. In fact, when your guy is term limited out, he will move to another seat or an appointment or some kind of an office, and yet another professional will be appointed by the parties. This puts the parties in stronger control of the system, not weakens their grip. So Mark really needs to think through this much more carefully than he has.
This is the only recourse we have to fight back. That's number one. Number two, I don't believe we should only be focused on a balanced budget amendment. Our problem is systemic. Our problem is structural. We are no longer a constitutional republic or federal republic or representative republic. I don't know what the hell we are, but we're not that. So to say I just want a balanced budget amendment, you're going to be balancing the federal budget, but the Congress will still be out of control, and Obama and the Supreme Court. That's why... There are other things that need to be done. Term limits on members of Congress.
Yes.
Term limits on the Supreme Court and so forth.
You begin to see now that Levin is expanding the scope of what he wants at a new constitutional convention, or what he calls a convention of states. And that's part of the problem. Actually, he's busy refuting his own argument here, and he does that again later. But the one thing I want to go to, we've already talked about the term limits. By the way, we agree with Levin that Supreme Court justices should have limited terms. At the Institute for Principled Policy, a number of us have discussed this. We think it should be 7 years. That's a good term, and they should be staggered so that some justices are appointed by each two-term president. In any case, he says this is our only recourse. No, this is not our only recourse. And in fact, Levin negates his own argument a little later on in this interview on that issue. So we'll get to it.
Yes. I will tell you that when I saw that it was only budget, I thought, well, that's a good start. But term limits should be in there as well. And everybody agrees on term limits except those in power.
Of course.
And the only way it will happen is through a convention of states.
That's correct. The only way you're going to bust up this entrenched professional class is to bust them up.
Okay, so
keep begging them to bust themselves up or beg them to restrain themselves They're not going to do it.
Here's the problem with this that I have not been able to solve, and you probably have thought it all through. The problem is not necessarily with the politicians. I mean, it is with the politicians, but it doesn't stop there. The State Department needs to be just fumigated. So how do you get new guys coming in all the time? You're going to have all the Karl Roves, all the professionals that are there who are like, no, you don't know how the game is played. We've been setting this up for a long time. You just do this. How do you get the State Department to react to politicians? They'll think these guys will come and go. We'll be here forever.
Here's a couple of things. Number one, this is why among my proposed reform amendments, 3/5 of the state legislatures. You know, the state legislatures, Glenn, acting together are more powerful than the federal government, period. This is what people don't get. The framers said, okay, here, we're going to give you a fire alarm. And if the house is on fire, pull the damn thing. So my proposal is that the state legislatures, if 3/5 of the legislatures want to override a federal statute or a federal regulation, they can do it within 2 years, they do it.
Okay, we've already talked about that term limit thing, and Glenn Beck actually seems to get the problem with the whole term limit thing. He just hasn't fully developed his thought on that, and he thinks Levin has really fully thought it through. Well, he hasn't, and you can tell it by this proposal for 3/5 of the states being able to come out with some kind of legislation to negate federal law. Well, Mark Levin is an adamant opponent of something called nullification, which is part and parcel of the state sovereignty that was given to us in the 10th Amendment. And the fact is that Levin begins to develop the argument, despite the fact that he hates nullification, in favor of nullification. He thinks that it's not a constitutional power. And clearly it is, because he's taking an express powers philosophy. It's too complex to get into here. Take our Institute on the Constitution class if you want to understand that. But what Levin's doing is beginning to develop an argument in favor of nullification, despite the fact that he hates it. That is our actual recourse here. And we don't want to leave you with the idea that we have no ideas about how to fix this. Nullification is the answer, and that is the state seizing back the power that's been reserved to them in the Constitution itself, using the power given to them in the 10th Amendment.
And there are other proposals in there. You're talking about the permanent bureaucracy.
Yes.
Well, we have to elect people, or in my view, appoint senators through the state legislative process.
Amen.
Who are going to do that. You know, we can only go so far. You've made the point that the real war here is a culture war. Okay, if Americans don't want to be free, they're not going to be free. You're the latest to say this. Franklin said it. Lincoln said it. Reagan said it. You've said it. It's true. If we don't want to be led by virtuous people, we're not going to be led by virtuous people. If we want to live under the iron fist of invisible, shadowy consultants and operatives, then we will. But there are certain things we can do to try and address this, like term limits, like giving the state legislatures the power to appoint senators again, and giving the state legislatures the power to override these outrageous federal regulations and federal statute. We wouldn't have Obamacare today if the state legislatures would step up. We wouldn't have an out-of-control EPA today if the state legislatures would step up. So when I talk to these state senators and state representatives, I say, hey, pal, you have an obligation under the federal Constitution to step up. Now step up and do something.
Well, at the end there, you heard Mark Levin directly refute his own argument. And basically what he said was that the state legislatures can step up and stop some of these things from happening. Well, guess what? He's right. And it's called nullification. There have been nullification bills up before the Ohio legislature. And to be quite honest, the Ohio legislature has been too chicken to pass it. And the reason they've been too chicken to pass it is because there's too much federal money involved. We'll lose our funding for this. We'll lose our funding for that. We'll lose our subsidy for this. We'll lose our subsidy for that. There's the reason. I would suggest you read a book called Restoring America, One County at a Time by Dr. Joel McDermott. We'll put a link out to it on our website. And you can read that, and his main theme is don't take the cheese. If you want your freedom back, you got to stop taking the subsidies that come with it. that come with the federal power and the cession of federal power. What Mark Levin said there, he wants to see the states appoint senators again. So do I. I'm absolutely in favor of that. And guess what? I've been in favor of that for more than 40 years. I'm 58 years old. Gosh, I'm closer to 50 years. And the fact is, the people that he at the beginning of this interview said he despised have been for that and working for it and working hard for it for 60 years. So Mark Levin is not particularly original in his thinking on these issues, and he's not the inventor of them, and he's not even really thought them through very clearly. A convention of states, or quote-unquote, or a new constitutional convention is a bad idea. We're going to play a clip from Tom DeWeese. That's a presentation made at Camp America in 2010, where he talks about precedents and conventions. So, here's Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center. Good friend of Camp Americans and a good friend of mine, Tom DeWeese. Tom DeWeese is the CEO of the American Policy Center, and it's a really long story, and if you want to hear it sometime, he got to start reading conservative literature while he was in college, and it turned out it was from my mom's bookstore. So, and we discovered that when we were at a conference together in Georgia. He said, yeah, I used to go to this great little bookstore in Hebron that was run by this woman. And I said, well, you're sitting across the table from her. Right there she is. So, but Tom is the CEO of the American Policy Center. The American Policy Center is an educational and lobbying, and I don't know what all you do there, Tom. I know education and lobbying, and it's an action coordination center on very important, very, very important items, and you can get to them on the web at americanpolicy.org. And believe me, you need to go there, because sign up for Tom's sledgehammer reports on things on upcoming legislation. Now, Tom today is going to give you a talk. I think you're doing one on an issue that Tom and I have worked very closely together, and that is a proposed new constitutional convention, which we are opposing. And also on Freedom Works talk, and that'll be later. But today, I want you to give a nice warm welcome to Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center.
Welcome, campers. I guess now you welcome me. I don't know. Oh, geez. I've been in Orlando, Florida for the last week, since Thursday. We got a tour of NASA, of the Space Center down there, with some astronauts with us and so forth. And what really, really disturbed me was the fact that what I was looking at was NASA in a museum, because Barack Obama has now pretty much totally killed the space program. So we're stuck here on Earth, so we got to make the best of it. Got a question for you. Who is, or who was, the first president of the United States? Anybody? Who, what? Now stop it. George Washington? How many think George Washington? Nah, you're wrong. George Washington was the 8th president of the United States. First president of the United States was a gentleman by the name of John Hanson, excuse me. After the revolution was over, the United States went into the government of the country was under a thing called the Articles of Confederation. And the Articles of Confederation was a very loose, a very weak government. And that was by design, because the states did not want to lose their power. The states wanted to be the ultimate power over their territory, and they didn't want somebody in a capital city telling them what to do. So they created these Articles of Confederation, and they had a very, very weak government. And John Hanson was the first president. The president would only serve for 1 year. But and most people don't know who John Hanson is. You ever hear his name before? No? Well, I didn't either until I read this. But it's interesting to know how much influence John Hansen had on our lives during his 1 year as president. He's the one who designed the presidential seal that is still used today. He is the one who set Thanksgiving, the date of Thanksgiving, that we still use today. He was very, very popular in the 1780s, and he was unanimously elected by the Congress to be the president. And he also, there was a thing called Shays' Rebellion, that when a bunch of farmers began to get very upset about the taxes that were put on them in Massachusetts, in the states, they began to rebel, and they threatened to overthrow the government, and they wanted to put George Washington in as a king. And there was a great, right after the Revolution, a lot of people wanted George Washington to be king of America. And instead we got John Hanson. And he is the one who ordered that all foreign troops from all the European countries get out of the United States. So John Hanson was a, what he did in his presidency was set up what are called precedents. Who knows what a precedent is? Anybody know what a precedent is? Nobody? Well, it's good that we bring this up because that's the whole theme of my talk here. Precedent means something that hasn't been done before and somebody does it in making policy. That now becomes a precedent. When George Washington would not run for re-election for a third term, that set a precedent that no other president until Franklin Roosevelt ever broke away from that. When a president or a Supreme Court decision or Congress makes a decision, and it's the first time it's ever been done, what happens then is somewhere in the future, if the issue comes up again, then they say, well, what did they do in the past? What happened? And that becomes a precedent. And I want you to remember that word because that's going to become very important as we go through all this. And by the way, the other first seven presidents, Elias, help me, Barry. Thank you. Boudinot, Thomas Mifflin, you guys are amazing. Richard Henry Lee, John Hancock, you probably heard of him, Nathan Gorman, Arthur St. Clair, and Cyrus Griffin were all president prior to George Washington. Now, what happened with George Washington? Why we say he's the first president? He is the first president who served under the Constitution of the United States, not the Articles of Freedom. I mean, the Articles of Confederation. Now, the reason that we went into dislike of the Articles of Confederation is because they were very, very weak, and there was very little coordination among the states, and no one was happy. There was great question about how the other states would work together, how they would have commerce between them. But one of the important things was that the other countries wouldn't deal with us because they thought there's no country, there's no government here. England, who signed the Treaty of Paris to end the Revolution, refused to obey that treaty because they said, well, you haven't got a government. We don't have a way to talk to. We haven't got a way to answer for this. So there were lots and lots of problems with the Articles of Confederation. Barry, how do I get this to go down? I'm just trying to make the scroll up.
That's a little...
Thank you. There we go. Okay. Computer expert, I am not. So, England wouldn't honor the treaty. Interstate commerce wasn't happening. Commerce in between the states, they weren't honoring boundaries. So lots and lots of problems. So there began to be support that was growing in the states for the idea of a stronger government. A lot of the states weren't, the state governments didn't want that, but a lot of the people were beginning to. And in the middle of all this, as that support began to grow, John Adams, who was the ambassador at the time to England and was having all kinds of trouble trying to get England to honor the treaty that they had signed, saw that we needed to do something with a stronger government. He wrote a paper on his vision of government. We talk about, you've probably heard this said before, the founding fathers, what a miraculous group of people they were, that they had studied every kind of government back in history in order to make our government the best that they could possibly find. And the true scholar in all that wasn't all the founding fathers. Primarily, it was John Adams. He was a scholar of government. He read constantly on these things. So he writes this paper that tells the that describes his ideas behind government. And a lot of the ideas we hold today came from that paper and came from John Adams. It became very widely read. All right. There we go. So a call went out across the country for a Constitution convention. And the thing was that, as I said, a lot of the states were very concerned about the putting together a powerful central government. They wanted the states to keep their strength. So when they did finally pull together this constitutional convention, several of these states told their delegates, you will not talk about anything else but this issue, primarily the issue of how the states deal with each other, how they would have trade between Ohio and Kentucky or Maryland and Virginia, or there were problems there, and they just wanted to talk about that. They wanted to keep that power. So they went there with these instructions. But there were people who saw what they wanted this constitutional convention to be. James Madison, primarily, corresponding with Thomas Jefferson, who was the ambassador to France at the time, and Alexander Hamilton. These guys wanted to create a much stronger central government. They wanted to take the Articles of Confederation and throw them out and create a whole new constitution. And before the delegates got to this convention in Philadelphia, James Madison and Hamilton and others had put together papers. They had all these details of exactly what they wanted to do. They were creating their own agenda. Anybody ever, are you familiar with the term consensus meeting? Anybody know what that is? Consensus meeting is something that's used today to put very bad policy in place without a debate. You have a professional person who knows how to use psychology on the whole audience, and he has a predetermined outcome. He decides where this thing's going to be when this meeting is over. And he will slowly but surely lead you all into that direction so that at the end, not only have you done what he wants you to do, he makes you think it was your idea. And that's really how a lot of bad policy is being put into place today. Well, that's exactly what James Madison did. He created a consensus meeting of all the delegates of the Constitutional Convention, all these people who were told, don't talk about anything else. He comes in, shuts the doors of Philadelphia Independence Hall, and locks the windows, and sits everybody down and says, here's what we're going to do. And for, 6 weeks or so, they sit there and meet, and nobody knows what they're doing. And when it's all over, they come out with a brand new constitution, completely against the rules of what they were supposed to do. Now, what they did in that convention is a precedent. It was never done before. There has not been a constitutional convention since that time. So if we were to have a constitutional convention today, what would be the first thing that the people in that convention would look at, or the people who were putting it together would look at? They would say, what did they do in 1787? What did they do then? It's the only time there's ever been a constitutional convention. So that's a precedent, and that's very important. Keep that in mind as we move forward. What that precedent meant was that the states had no control over their own delegates. The delegates were completely in control of what they did, and they went in, made their own rules, had their own agenda, put together their own document, and when it came out, here it is. Now, and as I said, there hasn't been one since then. Now, here's an interesting thing. When they brought out this new constitution, which really was a much stronger government, a stronger central government, and the Articles of Confederation said, this was the law of the land, the Articles of Confederation, and it said in the Articles of Confederation that in order to change these articles in any way required 100% of the delegates, or of the states, to ratify it. 100% of the existing states had to ratify any changes to the Articles of Confederation. That was the law of the land. Now, the new constitution that they had written, not yet ratified, not yet the law of the land, said 2/3 of the states needed to ratify any changes before they become law of the land. However, when the new constitution was presented to the states, an interesting thing took place. 100% of the states didn't have to ratify the new constitution, only 2/3. But isn't it interesting? We were suddenly going by the rules of the new constitution that was not yet ratified, ignoring the one that was the law of the land. Should have been 100% to make a change. I mean, certainly putting a new constitution in is a change to the Articles of Confederation, would it not be? So here we have a precedent that is set that if a constitutional convention were called today, what we hear all the time is that you don't have to worry about a constitutional convention if they make too radical of changes to the Constitution. The states still have to ratify it. 2/3 of the states still have to ratify it. So it's not a danger. Well, there's a precedent that says that's not true. What if the delegates of a new constitutional convention would put together a new document that said only we have to ratify it? Or maybe only the Boy Scouts have to ratify it. You know, they could say anything they want to say and say that's how it's going to be done. Because of why? We have a precedent. Back when they did the Constitution, at the Constitution Convention, they didn't follow the rules of the existing law. They made up their own law. This is vitally important to understand why Chuck and I and a lot of other people are terrified of putting together a new constitutional convention today. And the other thing is Article 5 of the Constitution, our Constitution today, all it says is let me get the exact words here. On the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments which shall be valid to all intents and purposes when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states. Well, it doesn't say a word in there about how we proceed from there. It says, when enough states call for a constitution convention, Congress has to call it. That's it. Doesn't say how delegates are chosen. Doesn't say what the qualifications of the delegates will be. Doesn't say what they have to do to go by an agenda. It says Congress will pull together a constitutional convention. Who's in charge of Congress today? Who's the Speaker of the House, of Representatives?
Nancy
Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is the lady who, against everything people wanted in this country, just over a month ago, passed a national health care bill that the entire country was screaming, no! Nancy Pelosi wanted it, and she did it anyway. She pulled every stinking, dirty trick in politics you can possibly pull, and Nancy Pelosi did it against all odds. Now I ask you, we call a constitutional convention today, and Nancy Pelosi is in charge of deciding the rules. Where do you think the Constitution is going to go? She hates the Constitution. She wants to get rid of the Constitution. The Constitution is in her way. Because Nancy Pelosi is not a constitutionalist. She is not in favor of limited government, as the Constitution says. She is not in favor of our having our liberties. She is a totalitarian who wants the government to tell you everything you do. Every aspect of your life. That's what Nancy Pelosi wants, and I am not sugarcoating this. So, what happens when we call a constitutional convention? Nancy Pelosi sets the rules. Well, and she says, you hear this all the time, how many of you heard it said that the Constitution is an antiquated document? Anybody? You hear this? You hear it in school. You hear them talk about it. You know, this was written by a bunch of old white guys with slaves 200 years ago. We need something for today. I mean, they couldn't see the internet. They couldn't see the, anything that we have today in our modern world. Yeah.
A lot of people argue that Nancy wouldn't have control over the states. When the states select their delegates,
yeah, I'm going to get to that because I've got that specifically. I've got that, but yeah, absolutely. But this is what they say, and today we've got. I want to tell you, you guys, in your lives today, we have the most difficult political climate in history. It used to be kind of easy, black and white, this side and this side. Sometimes they could even come together and compromise and come up with something good. But today, it is so fractured. There are so many little undercurrent things happening, so many bad things that are happening. People who understand how to manipulate people. And with all the tools we have today of communication, and should all be good things, and technology, things that make your life easier and so forth, always in the background are people who say, yeah, that GPS put in your car will help you find your car if you're lost, a chip under your arm, if you put that in your child, if they get lost or kidnapped, we can find them. Same thing with your dog. All good things, good technology. In the background, there's always somebody thinking, and I can control where they go. I'll know everything they do. They won't have a right to freedom of speech. They won't have a right to freedom of travel. I can control all that. But I won't tell them that, of course. We'll just tell them it's for their good, for the safety, for the children, for always for your own good. Well, this is what we fear. When we take the Constitution and essentially put it on an operating table, and we give people like Nancy Pelosi the scalpel, what do you think's going to happen? And so again, that is why we fear it. But who decides? What are the qualifications for a delegate to a constitutional convention? Well, there could be a vote in the states to elect the delegates to represent that state. But we live in a time of diversity. So it could be important that, we've got all these illegal immigrants who aren't citizens, but we need inclusion. So let's have a huge representation of them, of what they want to see our country be. It could be all lawyers. It could be, like as it is now, it could be anything they decide it to be, and we have no power over knowing what that's going to be in to begin with. So, now, a little history. As Chuck mentioned, back in December 2008, I got a phone call from Chuck late one evening, and his opening words were, "Do you know what's happening in Ohio tomorrow?" I said, "No, Mom's having breakfast. I don't know. What was happening was there were fellows who had decided to put up a resolution to call for a constitutional convention on the issue of a balanced budget amendment. These were not wild-eyed Nancy Pelosi radicals. These were good conservative people. And they were concerned about the massive spending going on in Washington. We're going to control this. The incredible part was what had kind of gone through under the radar, and we didn't really hadn't noticed this happening, but over the about 20 years, 32 states had already passed this balanced budget resolution calling for a constitutional convention to talk about just that one issue, just that one thing. That's all we're going to talk about. If Ohio passed it, it'd be 33. Then we would be one state away, because they need 34 in order to call a constitutional convention. And so Chuck went into action immediately. You kind of demanded them to have a hearing, didn't you? They weren't even going to have a hearing. So you had about, 10 people there to testify? So suddenly they were faced with this wall of protest against this thing, which they thought was just going to pass very easily. Chuck calls me. The next morning, I put out one of our sledgehammer alerts nationwide. This is an action alert. It goes out by email, and it went out over the country. It was picked up by people. Hundreds of thousands of people got this email. And while Chuck is there in the hearing, haranguing them in the committee room, meanwhile, phone calls start ringing in the offices of the state legislators to tell people people were protesting this call for a constitutional convention. It took about 3 hours, I think. We finally killed it. And that was the end of it. And so it didn't come up again. Well, now it's gotten worse. These were not bad people. They were concerned about big government. They wanted to control government. But they failed to understand this issue of the agenda. They honestly believe that they can control the agenda. And again, I take you back to the whole country saying no to national health care, and they didn't care. They did it anyway. So just because they say, where do these guys get this in their head, that they can control anything against that kind of a government attitude? Well, what came out, there is this. I got in the mail a couple months ago a very expensive, very slick package. It contained a whole book about this thing. I didn't bring it because it's too heavy to carry. But this folder and this little brochure and this letter addressed to me, it's called 10 Amendments for Freedom. And it says, more and more state legislators are coming to the conclusion that an Article 5 convention, a constitutional convention, is the only means to change the direction our nation is heading, even though over the years there has been a fear of convention that it could be a runaway. In other words, they're answering Chuck and me, our fear that this could be a runaway. And runaway, what they mean is they could do anything they want. It says, simply, it is not reasonable to assume there can be enough delegates sent to a convention who will propose amendments which repeal the Bill of Rights or legalize socialism. Even if they did, these amendments would never be ratified. They're saying it is not reasonable to have our fears that these things would happen. The risk of having an Article 5 convention is now outweighed by the reward saving our country and our freedom. Now get this. This is my favorite line of the letter. Building up, as always for the children, it's always for our health, it's always for the good of us. Can you imagine the excitement in the nation leading up to the convention? Schools will have to dust off history books which teach how our nation was founded. Many people, for the first time, will read the Constitution. The issues will be discussed at length, expressing what was happening to our country over the years. There will be a new rebirth of patriotism in our nation, and the world will see how the American people still control their government, inspiring others to take control of theirs. Woo! Yeah! So then, now this guy's name is William Fruth. And what he's proposing is this: 10 amendments for freedom. An amendment for the balanced budget, back to that. An amendment to repay the national debt in 50 years. An amendment for term limits for Congress. Control illegal immigration. Government transparency, in other words, open government, things not done in behind the scenes. Line item veto. That means that the president could look at a bad bill and say, I don't want this or this or this, but this is a good part. That we would be an English-speaking nation, and English would be our number one language, and that no foreign law shall bind us. We have Supreme Court justices that are now saying, I'm not looking at the Constitution to make this decision in court. I'm looking at what other countries are doing. So that amendment would be to stop them from doing that. Now, about 9 of these I don't have a problem with. I'm not real happy with the term limits thing. But these are designed for people like you to say, yeah, this is what we need to do. We've got to have all those amendments. We can save the country. And that's the argument. And what they're doing is they've mailed this package out to all state legislators, every governor, something like 7,000 people they mailed this out to. And the other thing that it does is it says in the resolution that they're putting together, here are the 10 amendments, and then they say this will tell exactly how the delegates are chosen and that only this agenda can be talked about. Only the agenda we're having here. That's what the states are going to ratify, and that's what we're going to do for the Constitutional Convention. And so all your fears are silly, and it's not going to happen, and there it goes. Now, why is he wrong? What's the word? Precedent. The precedent of the first Constitutional Convention was all those rules are out of the door. We're going to lock the door. We're going to do what we want to do. That's the precedent. He can talk about it till he's blue in the face. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They're going to go into the convention, and they're going to do what they want to do anyway. And who decides who the delegates are? Nancy Pelosi. How can these nitwits not get it? Nancy Pelosi passed the health care bill. They're going to say, we can pass all these amendments, and it'll all happen just the way we want it to happen. You know. Yeah. Yeah. Barry, you have something?
The one thing that package really shows is that the liberals don't have the strength to pull this off. They have to con conservatives into jumping on the bandwagon if they're ever going to get it done.
Yeah.
That's first. The second point is, it doesn't matter what the states do. There's a little doctrine called preemption that the feds can do to basically change the rules on how the delegates deal with whatever they deal with.
Yeah.
Here. Any federal preemption to basically throw out any state's requirements on their federal delegates.
Yeah. Now, the scary part is there are several governors now behind this. I received an email from a very close associate of mine who is absolutely a constitutionalist, a man who is just dedicated to the cause of freedom, is out there in legislatures and so forth working to stop national ID and government surveillance and all this sort of thing, and he's a great patriot, sends me an email with this proposal and said, Tom, I know you've been afraid of a Constitutional Convention, but I know, you know, this seems to have the answers to it, and I could sell this to my legislators that I'm working with. What do you think? I had just completed my article on this and immediately sent it to him, and I went, no! He said, okay. So, but there are legislators. I believe it's the lieutenant governor in South Carolina that's working to push this. There's someone else in Florida. Is it again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is where we are with this thing. And, you know, again, we have happening in this country, John Adams said that our republic would not stand, our Constitution was written for moral people. If you don't have any morals, if you don't have, God on your side in that, then it will collapse. And that's what we see happening. As I said earlier, it used to be that everything was really easy. You had liberals and conservatives, and and even they weren't all that much opposed to each other. There were varying degrees. But what we have today is a mixture of communism, fascism, and corporatism, where you can't tell the difference. You don't know who the players are. Corporatism are people who are using companies, worldwide corporations, in partnership with government. And what these are monopolies. They're government-sanctioned monopolies. They're not free enterprise. So, that mixed in with communism, which wants to control everything, and fascism working with the corporations to impose policy, it's very difficult to say, well, that's liberal, that's conservative, because liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats, are all doing this. They all, in little pieces and parts of it, they're all kind of pulling this together. And so when you decide who the delegate's going to be, you say, oh, well, we've got a conservative like John McCain, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. Have you heard the term rhinos? Do you know what that means? Republicans in name only. These are people who tell everybody they're conservative. Now, conservative is supposed to mean that you want limited government, you want individual liberty, you want free enterprise, you want private property rights, and your job is to defend that. But what's happening is these guys are using these terms, but they're voting for bills like national ID cards and taking away your property rights and having bigger and bigger federal education programs and on and on and on, all in the name of being a conservative. So, again, who are the delegates? Who are the ones who are going to decide? Is it going to be real constitutional advocates? You think Chuck has a prayer of being a delegate at this thing? Barry could be elected president of the Constitutional Convention. I could be the doorman. They won't let us near this thing. I guarantee that. So who's going to decide? And this is the thing that we wanted to bring out. The history, they're using history to try to say, as this Fruth says here, let me read this to you again. I just cannot believe he wrote these words. Can you imagine the excitement in the nation leading up to the convention? Everybody's going to go, the Constitutional Convention, it's going to be like the Super Bowl. We're all going to get so excited about how we're all going to talk about the Constitution, and it's going to be the number one thing in everybody's mind. Right after Dancing with the Stars. So, again, let us just review here, and then we'll have a break again. Precedence. That is the key to all of it. Learn that word, understand what it means. Precedence. Happened before, hasn't happened since, going to happen again. What do we have to go on to make up the rules? What did they do back then? And what did they do back then? They threw out all the rules. They paid absolutely no attention to any orders they were given, and they did what they wanted to do. What's the precedence? For today, Nancy Pelosi, No rules. She makes them. They'll do what they want to do. And the Constitution will be no more. So take the message home. If you hear anybody talking about the Constitutional Convention just to save our country, they're dead wrong. Thank you very much.
Well, that was Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center talking on a speech he gave at Camp American in 2010 called Precedents and Conventions. If you'd like a video copy of that, you can get it at www.principledpolicy.com. Just follow the link to the video. That's all the time we have for this week. Please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.